you're talking about it, it's because we're talking about it. The T. Gerard Williams Show. Yeah.
Hey, my friends. This is T. Gerard Williams, your host and your executive producer of the T. Gerard Williams Show. And today, we are crossing the international boundary. We're going to have a conversation that transcends our local area and takes us across the globe. It takes us first across the country and then across the globe. I want to introduce our featured guest today, a brother that is doing some amazing work. And once we start the conversation, you will be amazed yourself. His name is Brother Yusuf Tura. Brother Tura, are you on the line, sir?
Yes, I am. Thank you very much for such a warm, welcoming introduction.
Hey, my friend, listen, I am glad to have you. I've been anticipating our conversation, and I've been cheating a little bit because I've actually been going through some information to set the tone for what we're going to be doing today. But you know what? First of all, let me do this. Where are you calling in from today?
I'm actually calling from Seattle, Washington.
Seattle, Washington. Well, yeah. You know what? How's the weather in Seattle today?
The weather is a bit gloomy. It's not as warm as Miami. But I'm very optimistic that it will get better here in a few days. So.
Well, you know what? Gloomy must be the word for the day because we're under cloudy cover. We've been raining all day. We have a little tropical. In fact, we have our first tropical storm of the season, and the season hasn't even started yet. They have a storm out there that's acting kind of funny today, so hopefully it'll just dissipate and won't cause any damage. But listen, we didn't call to talk about the weather, but it ties into what we're talking about because while we have rain, while we have all this gloom and cloud covering, there are places in the world where there's a drought going on. And we want to talk about that today. So I'm going to lay back for a minute, and I want to give you an opportunity to talk to my listeners to have them know exactly why we're here today, because it's a very important topic.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it. We're here to talk about a problem that is highly publicized. You know, we hear about a lot of problems in third world countries, poverty, environmental challenges, civil unrest. But I'm here today to talk about very specific problem that needs to be brought up to public attention. It is called an open fire cooking.
Open fire cooking?
Open fire cooking. Now, okay. cooking outdoor in a great country like USA, it's a novelty. You know when you go out camping?
Yes.
You set the campfire, you sit around, you have a great time. It's a novelty. It's a good thing. But in a lot of poor communities, especially in Africa, cooking is becoming a death sentence to a lot of families.
Hmm.
Imagine if you will. If you are in a village that I was born and raised in East Africa, in Ethiopia, you have to walk for miles and miles to collect the firewood just to cook. Not only that, you cook inside a very tight quarter in a small hut, inhaling all the pollutant that comes out of the firewood. According to World Health Organization, families that are using an open fire cooking to prepare the meal are exposed to equivalent to 2 packs of cigarettes every day. That's what I'm here to talk about today. And this is a silent killer that has been killing millions of children, especially children of age.
No, go ahead, sir.
Yeah, so I'm here to really talk about this problem that has not been getting as much attention as it should. And also about the solution that exists.
You know, and I was just going to ask you about the solution, but before we get to that, now let me just, you know, wrap my mind around this for a second. You're saying to me that in Ethiopia, and particularly in, you know, I guess it's a regional-wide phenomenon, most of the people are cooking on stoves that they've got to go out miles to get the firewood for, bring it back into their homes or some closed quarter, and then they're subject to breathing all of the smoke and the toxins that are coming out of the fire, the campfire, out of where they're built.
Absolutely, absolutely. And as you might already know, most of these hats don't have a proper proper airflow, and also it's like they use it's outdated, and it's like an old traditional way of cooking, which is it's called like a three stone open fire cooking, where you actually place three stones and place whatever you want to cook in, like and then you inhale all the pollutant that comes out of the fire.
Wow. You know what? Let me do this. To all of my listeners, if you're listening right now, you already know that the rule is have you some pencils and paper to write down all the information that we're going to give you. Right now we have Yusuf Tura, who's our guest today. Make sure you have everything that you need because this information is going to come fast and it's going to come that you're going to be a part of the solution. So right now, as we step back into the conversation, Mr. Tura already said that there was a solution. I'm going to ask him to share that solution with us today. Mr. Tura, the floor still is yours.
The solution is to make a small, affordable, portable cook stove that could eliminate or limit the pollution. And the stove that I'm here to talk about today is called Obama Stove.
Obama Stove?
Obama Stove.
Before we go any further, has this anything to do with our former president over here?
Well, the Obama Stove is named Obama back in 2007, towards the end of 2007, when I showed up in a village, helping the villagers making the stove. The first person that actually purchased the stove thought it was sent by the President Obama himself.
Oh.
And so they called it Obama Stove, and the name stuck.
And it's a good name. I like it.
I like it too. Go, Mr. President. I would like to get this stove in his hand someday.
Yes, would I. Maybe you know what? Maybe he's listening.
Maybe he's listening. Mr. President, if you are listening, how about helping your own stove, okay?
Absolutely. Because we found that the thing that makes this stove different, and Mr. Tour is going to share this with you, but there are three things about this particular stove. And of course, like I said, I cheated a little bit. I've actually read up on the stove. The three things that are specific about the stove that is first of all, it's quality. The next thing is efficiency. And the third thing is its price. So, Mr. Tour, could you go ahead and share some more about the Obama stove? I didn't really mean to try to steal any thunder, but I am so excited about the capabilities of this thing to save lives.
No, I appreciate that very, very much. It shows me that you really are well tuned into what's going around the world. So the stove has brought so much excitement and inspiration to local communities. It's a grassroots movement. It's about helping people so that they can help themselves. You know, a lot of times in poor communities, we go out there, we try to help with all the good intention. For the most part, we give things away. But that actually has undesired consequences. It kills creativity, it creates dependence. And also, you know, it's like handouts is a rocking chair. It rocks you back and forth, but it doesn't really take you nowhere.
Yeah, I like that. That is absolutely true.
There is a lot to this stove. It's not only the stove. It's about really the community. The stove is empowered the local youth that they have, they would have never had the chance to work and earn if it's not for this product or if it's not being for the Obama stuff. The young men that are professional artisans that are trained to craft the stoves, and you have women and young girls that are doing the ceramic insert, which is the conversion chambers. I don't know if you had a chance to see the video. You've probably seen the stove. And so you have this community, the young men and women coming together, making something for themselves and saying what a lot of poor communities need is hands up, not hands down. That's what the stove is all about. Durability, of course, it's a quality craftsmanship. It's made out of a locally available material that teaches people how to depend on themselves, how to do something for themselves, and also transferable knowledge that they can take it anywhere further into other villages, do the same thing, and make a living. That's what's so powerful about this stove.
That is definitely powerful. So you're saying that not only is the stove a lifesaver, but also it's an opportunity for craftsmen to build it and to earn a living.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Wow.
That's what makes it so incredible. That's why one of the reasons why I get so excited about this project is we've been doing this for many, many years. I just want to get the publicity that it needs. That way I can get more support on board. That way we can do more of this.
Okay. How many stoves would you say have been already processed, sold, or in the hands of those who need it?
Over 250,000 stoves are already out there in use over the years. And now, according to some of my Rotary friends, now an average family in a community like Ethiopia has about 4 or 5 families, so the stove has already impacted over 1 million lives, improved
wow.
lives over 1 million lives. And the numbers are growing every day. And I want to get into 1 million homes. That's really that one of the reasons the outreach program that I'm trying to do right now is I'm trying to get into 1 million homes, especially right now with some of the crisis that is happening in that part of the world. I just got back a couple of months ago myself. And there are some challenges, there are some crises that are happening, and I want to really drum up some help so that we can build more of the stores and getting in the people that need it. For the people that are living on less than $2 a day, can you imagine living on less than $2 a day?
I can't imagine that at all, not by any stretch of the imagination. $2 a day. No, I cannot. You know,
Unfortunately, that's half of the world's population.
You know, the thing is, somebody has to take a stand and try to change this. And I applaud your efforts because, you know, we watch the local news and we don't hear anything about the current crisis in Ethiopia or anywhere in the African continent. And so what happens is we become so callous and so unaware. You know, we sometimes don't know what we don't know. And so the problem comes up to be when something comes up like this, a solution that is so simple that is mind-boggling, we tend to balk at it and tend to, you know, withdraw from it and to shrink from it and maybe even try to ridicule it at some times. But I'm here today to let you know, brother, that we're standing behind you 100% because this is something that's totally necessary. It not only, like I said, not only changes lives, but impacts their economic crisis as well. So, brother, you are amazing to me, and I want to applaud you publicly and across the airways and to whoever hears this and rehears it as we rebroadcast it. In fact, I'm going to step out on faith and say that this is going to be an evergreen conversation. We're going to promote this periodically just over time because we're not going to date this and say that it's only for today. This is for today, tomorrow, and further down the line. So we're going to continue rebroadcasting this over and over. I don't know the schedule yet because we haven't set it up yet, but I promise you that it's going to be heard until it just stops until we solve the problem. So, brother, I applaud you.
I appreciate it very, very much. That's very, very kind. And that's what we need, you know, in this global village. What we need is we need to find a way to raise each other up. We can reach out, and it's like the problem that happens in the other part of the world, it cannot be ignored, especially when it comes to poverty and environmental degradation, because eventually it will affect us all. After all, we all live on the same Mother Earth.
Same planet. That's true.
The same planet. It's not like we are moving anytime soon.
No, we're not.
And that's the thing, you know, some of these problems have the solutions, but because there is an enough awareness, and most people that I talk to, other than the people that have some like insider information on the poverty, and especially with problems on open fire cooking, most people have no clue. And so it's my responsibility to let the world know, to share this information with anyone, anytime, any place. You know, the awareness is what is lacking. Without awareness, you can't really solve a problem that you're not aware of.
To sound the alarm or hail the charge that there's a solution, there's something that can be done. It's just the fact of, will we do it?
Yeah, and the solution is so simple, brother. The solution is, like, to me, it's like mind-boggling. Over the years, I have talked and I have shared this information with many, many people, and the solution seems to some so simple that it's almost hard to believe.
Yes.
And it's some of the challenges. The problems, all we need is like a practical and simple solution that empowers the people. That way they can solve the problem. You see, the other component to the stove is like empowering the local community at the grassroots level to do something for themselves.
Yes.
And to build viable social enterprises around the stove. Things just gotten bigger and bigger. Around Obama stove, we have what we call Obama Village, where a lot of women and young girls doing the ceramic insert. And what I have learned from them is like they turn around and hired other helps by creating more job opportunity. And it has such a triple effect across the whole village. It was unlike anything I've ever seen. I had a visitor from Global Alliance, it's a UN affiliated that is focused on solving these problems. On the field, that had actually had a chance to visit all this work that we have done, that have done some, you know, reports on it. And he was just blown away. The kind of change that you see. I mean, you have people that would have never had a chance to work and make something for themselves, how they actually turn around, they have another help.
Isn't that amazing?
It's an amazing, it's a cliche, but, you know, if you want to, if you teach a person how to fish rather than just giving them the fish, right?
Yeah. You know, I heard it said that, you know, just as you were saying, that if you give a man a fish, you feed him for the day. If you teach them how to fish, you feed them for a lifetime. But we forget there's one more component. If you teach them how to do a fishing business, you feed them for generations. And you are doing just that. And you're doing
that.
That's
beautiful. That's it. Social entrepreneurship, social enterprises, the enterprises that are solving problems, but at the same time, making money. There's nothing wrong with being, you know, profitable. That's what gets things going. But as long as you're doing it right. And that's what is all Obama's stuff was all about.
Yes.
And making life better.
I'm looking at it. I'm hearing your passion, and I see that this is, you know, a viable solution.
Absolutely. And it's scalable, it, you know, it's something that you can replicate across the board. I have a goal down the road that I would like to take the same model, the same model that we have used in Ethiopia, to help people in South Sudan and Somalia too. These are countries in part of the world where help rarely gets there. Mm. You hear nothing but all the pain and suffering of people. And, you know, no matter where you're from, we all have similar needs. We all want to work and we all want to make a living. We all want to help our families. We all want to get better than where we are, right?
Right.
And I would really want to get this simple technology, this simple project around some part of Sudan and Somalia as well. And that requires raising awareness, drumming up, you know, talking to people like yourself, creating an ambassadors for a cooking problem that is happening. And that way we can get the know-hows, you know, you can, you know, I've been very fortunate because I was fortunate enough to get introduced to Rotary. Rotary has been a good help as far as, you know, mentoring and providing some guidance. The great people at the Rotary, especially my own Rotary Club at the Lake Forest Park.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have people that are Fledge. Fledge is a conscious it's an incubator. It's like great mind in Seattle. I mean, they have like hundreds of volunteers in that group that are helping social entrepreneurs in training and guidance and all kind of ways. So I've been lucky. I mean, this has the people that have helped me along the way. You'll be surprised. If you go out there and do something that you believe in, the help will show up.
Oh, of course. Of course. And then when people see your passion, that generates more passion. And so, yeah. Because had you not flagged me on this and let me know about this situation, you know, this conversation wouldn't be happening. And I wouldn't be able to share with our listeners what is going on around the world. Isn't that something?
This is like a global family, and a global right. family. I wanted to raise an awareness. You know, we Africa, especially East Africa, always have one crisis after another. But when it's all said and done, you know, we are there. We are humans. You know, we still have desires, needs. No matter what the circumstances, you still have to eat, and a lot of help agencies that are providing foods, and a lot of them, they're not aware that how are you supposed to cook if you get a sack of rice? How are you supposed to cook in a conflict area? Say if you live in a refugee camp, and if somebody provided you a bag of maize or corn, how are you supposed to cook it? I have seen a situation where refugees. Families with children that are staying at the a sack of grain or corn or because they have no means to cook it. We have an unimaginable amount of environmental catastrophe that has eliminated a lot of trees. And, you know, and if you are poor, you don't have an access to, obviously, electricity. You don't have money to buy kerosene. So you're just stuck, you know. I mean, back in early days when we are, like, I came from herders, you know, we used to use, we still, to some part, use cow dung to cook, right? Mm-hmm. But if you don't have the cows, you don't even have a dung. Can you believe that?
That's true, isn't it?
Where there are no cows, there is no dung. And where there are no trees, there is no shrubs, there is no wood to cook food. And it's just that sometimes I feel like I have not done enough to raise awareness. That's why I'm just like trying to get this in front of as many people as possible. And I know there are people, if they know this problem, there are a lot of people that probably would even come up with a better stuff. Who knows, right? I mean, first you have to know. You have to know what the problem is out there.
That's the first point right there.
Yeah, and with the current crisis, especially, you see, I came from the biggest ethnic group in Horn of Africa, the Oromo Nation, right?
Mm.
And these are courteous and a very peaceful, peace-loving and very spiritually inclined people that are very peaceful people. But under current circumstances, we are facing a very challenging situation that I try to focus only a cooking part because there are so many problems. You know, you can only do just one thing at a time.
Right, right.
And I have about a million or more internally displaced in Ethiopia. They need an urgent stoves and fuels. And keep in mind, as you have seen it on the video, not only do we make the stoves, but we do also make the fuels from agro-waste material.
You make the fuel as well?
The fuels as well.
Wow.
The fuel is...
Go ahead. The fuel is...
The fuel is comparable to a barbecue charcoal. I'm sure you know barbecue charcoal.
Right.
It's something comparable to barbecue charcoal. You can easily make it. It costs less than a few cents, and it burns for about 2 hours. You get somebody in a refugee camp, Obama stove, and a couple of briquettes, they set for a few days. You can accomplish all this for less than $10.
That's what I was just about to ask, you know, the price point. Now, I knew that it was $10. And because of the fact that, you know, you were telling me that the average wage was $2 per day, $1 or $2, how are the families being able to afford the $10? Would that be quite a stretch?
It's quite a stretch. I mean, there are, keep in mind, we are saying average, but there are a lot of people, most of them, about 50% of the people, in, you know, just my observation, are living on a really, on a, honestly, living on less than $1 a day. So that's like a really, it's outside reach for them. And we can, that's where one of the reasons why I'm here is, it's just to raise some funding. You know, I'm associated with a nonprofit organization here in Seattle. It's called Realize Impact. It's 501(c)(3), a nonprofit organization that I'm actually trying to drum up some donation towards that nonprofit organization. That way, I can build in collaborating with them. I can build and give stuff to the people that absolutely have any means to get it.
Okay, now that's, you're saying that we can make tax deductible donations at Realize Impact.
Realize Impact is, yeah. Realize Impact. It's also on Obama's stove webpage too. It's Realize Impact. It's 501(c)(3) tax deductible. You know, I'm trying to get drum up some donation so that I can actually build the stoves and give it to the people that, especially a refugee, and especially like I was saying earlier. We got about over a million internally displaced Oromo people. I mean, these are like some of them are my own family members.
Mm. Okay.
And I would like to really reach out to them and provide the stove. I mean, I can't do it for everybody, but with the help, I can definitely get the stoves in the hand. I mean, I will put in my time and all the other things that are available to me to make this thing happen.
That's fantastic. You know, and the thing is, during our conversation, we hadn't touched on the fact that, you know, donations would be very helpful. And I'm glad we're getting to the end of our conversation, but we're getting to the point where now it not only is something that has opened our eyes to a situation that is affecting our brothers across the globe, but it's also a way we can also step in and step up. So we're saying again that you can make tax deductible donations at realizeimpact.org/Obama Stove. Now, I'm saying that because I know you were writing this down, but I'm going to say it again. HTTP, you know the rest of that stuff, realize, R-E-A-L-I-Z-E, impact, impact.org/Obama Stove. That's where you can make your donations. Now, tell us a website where Obama Stove for the Obama Stove, your website for that?
Yeah, it's www.obamastove.com.
Okay, obamastove.com. We got that. That's
yeah.
Great. I'm going to put all these links in our on our Facebook and on our website to have it ongoing process. I'm also going to post a video showing you where they were actually building the stoves and how the workers were actually putting the components together, the people that you're actually helping. It's also good not only to know about it, but to see the people that you're actually helping. And so we're just floored with the opportunity to be able to help, you know, in this endeavor. And if you look at it, even a small donation, even a $10 donation can provide one stove and fuel for one family. And so there are thousands of families who actually need this help. And if we would just step up just a little, just a whatever you can give, that would be a great godsend to help in this endeavor. Brother Tura, I can't say it enough that I applaud your effort, because there are things that we haven't even discussed in this conversation, and I think that we're going to end up actually redoing this conversation again, having this conversation again, because it's so important. But I know for a fact that you have not shared with us that you're the founder of this project, and that you are not only the founder but the primary funder of this project. And so, you know, we haven't even touched on that. But, brother, you have our listeners in your corner, and we are definitely going to do what we can to assist you the best that we can.
Thank you very, very much. I appreciate it. It's been wonderful talking to you.
Well, let me do this before we close. If there was one thing that you could say to all of our listeners right now to get them to motivate themselves to understand this problem, what would you tell them?
Well, I'll only say one thing, what the ancient sages, you know, the saints would say. We are all visitors to this place and to this time. We are all passing through. Our purpose here is to love, to help, to lift one another up. That's all.
That's a beautiful way to end our show. My brothers and my sisters, first of all, thank you, Mr. Tura, for being our guest today. It has been an eye-opening, heart-rendering conversation. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Galatoma.
Say that again, because I heard you, but I don't know what it meant.
Yeah, it means thank you in the final Romo. Galatoma.
That's beautiful. Hey, listen, my friends, once again, this is T. Gerard Williams, your host and executive producer of the T. Gerard Williams Show. And as always, I'll see you when I see you. Bye-bye now.
The T. Gerard Williams Show. Coming to you live. With the best in talk radio. Get ready. The heartbeat of talk radio is the T. Gerard Williams Show. Talking about it.